Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. I am really excited today because we're going to have some live music, and that's something I've never done on this show. Embracing the Muse, the show you're listening to, is all about how we, at any age, can shape and maintain our creative paths. Because, you know, if I say creativity to people, a lot of them think, oh, you know, I'm not creative because I don't do this special thing or I haven't been super recognized. And what I'm discovering is that almost everybody has a creative passion. And on our island, Vashon Island, I feel like creativity is in the water system because people express it in so many ways. And one of those ways is an amazing dynamic music community. People who've been making music together for years that you'll see at the Strawberry Festival, you'll hear around town, they'll be out on the street, they'll be at parties, wherever. And Chuck Ream, my guest today, has been a long-time participant in that music community. So welcome, Chuck, and I hope we can inspire people to define their own creative roots at any age, not just the ones who started young and kept going, like maybe you did with music, because it sounds like you've been playing for a long time.
Well, thank you, Sally. I've actually didn't start playing music until I moved here to the island.
Really? I thought you had a banjo when you were a kid.
I did have a banjo
Doesn't that count?
I took tenor banjo lessons when I was 8 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And one time my mother picked me up from the banjo lesson and she noticed that my knuckles were all red. And I said, Mom, I really don't want to do this anymore. And she said, why not? He said, well, every time I make a mistake, that guy hits me.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Turns out, I mean, he was smacking me across the knuckles with
That's horrible.
Kind of like a switch.
Uh-huh.
And he was really mean. So we stopped banjo lessons. And I didn't pick the banjo up again until my mid-40s.
Oh, my goodness.
And I had a good friend who played clawhammer banjo, and he agreed to teach me clawhammer banjo because I really wanted to learn it.
Without the knuckle stick.
Without the knuckle stick. And he said, the only thing is, Chuck, I will charge for the lessons. It'll be a bottle of wine for each lesson, and we have to finish the bottle during the lesson.
That is, like, so perfect. Was that on the island now?
No, that was on the prairies in Illinois.
Oh, is that where you're from?
No, I'm from southwestern Ohio.
Oh, really?
And out in the country, we lived in a beautiful place. It was 14, I call it 14 miles of nobody there. And it was wooded, beautiful hills. In fact, the woods that we grew up above now is a nature reserve. And I was talking to my brother the other day, and he said, Chuck, you know those trees that we built tree houses in? They were giant oaks. He said they've fenced them off, and there's a sign on there talking about one of the trees and how old it is, because it's very old, from the 1700s. It's
huge. Goodness. Oh, my goodness.
And so,
yeah. Well, so you went to, so you grew up in Ohio, and then you moved to?
I went to school in Western Kentucky.
Western Kentucky.
Yeah.
So this is really interesting, because your music has, we're going to talk about it, because it is definitely its own genre, but it has a country feel. And I listened to it, you know, my first hit before I listened to the lyrics was, this is country. This, it feels like the kind of music that would have come out of Kentucky or Southern Ohio.
Yeah, Southwestern Ohio, Western Kentucky.
Where there might be some gospel and a lot of evangelical churches.
I grew up on that type of music. In fact, when I was in Western Kentucky going to school, going to university, the revival tents would come in.
Oh, my goodness.
And I would go out and go into the revival tents and just stand in the back just to listen to the music. And it was fabulous. I really enjoyed it and listening to it, and also the energy. So it was, I guess, part of my growing up as music. But
did you go, were you into the doctrine as well?
No.
No, so you could just come and go and enjoy the vibe.
I enjoyed the vibe. I enjoyed the music. It was the music. I went for the music.
Yeah.
And also would sneak into the back of some of the more traditional, I guess you would call it, religious music in some of the small country church in the area, and would listen to that and just enjoyed it.
It's wonderful, you know, and it's too bad our country's a little bit divided these days because, you know, you want to be able to celebrate what's good everywhere.
Well, I agree. And in fact, I call my music cosmic folk.
I love that.
And the reason is it combines an appreciation of nature, a metaphysical view of life, and my early roots of folk and country music.
That's what surprised me so much, because I was listening to it and I felt, you know, there was a twang in the country and even a little bit of honky-tonk. And then I'm listening to the words and I'm going, oh my gosh, that sounds more metaphysical New Thought. That's more Washington West Coast, you know? So how did this come about that you were able to bring two really different strands and weave them together into your own genre of music? How did that happen?
Well, it's interesting. Even as a young boy walking by myself in the fields and the woods in southwestern Ohio, I would hear music in my head. And sometimes it was so predominant that I would literally turn and look to see where that music was. And it was quite a surprise as a young boy to hear that. But I also always felt that there was something else there that I couldn't quite see, but I could feel. And that, I mean, I'm talking 6, 8, 7
That's amazing. I love that. Was it a sense that the music was coming through you, or you were, it was sort of sourced somewhere and then you were the one listening, or?
Well, not at the time, but as I grew older and became more aware and did a lot of studying on a spiritual and metaphysical level, I believe that I realized then that the music I was hearing and still feel is part of a universal song of energy.
Mm.
And that, you know, we are full of energy. And in fact, there's a song of mine called Oceans of Energy.
Yes.
Which talks about that very thing. And that song was really wonderful to record because I had Diane Krause come in and do the saxophone on it.
Oh,
and she did a great job.
Lucky you. It's a great song. I really enjoyed it and stuff. So you were studying New Thought, metaphysics, and things like that. Was that when you were moved out to Vashon some, or before that?
It was long before that.
Really?
I got into yoga and both. I used to do Raja and Hatha yoga and also meditation when I was 16.
Amazing.
And I just kind of stumbled on it myself in the library.
In Ohio.
And so I used to cramp myself up trying to meditate like the yogis. But that didn't work so well until I finally realized that I just needed to relax and be part of what I felt around me. And pretty soon I would feel energy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was, and also see energy in my mind's eye.
I love this combo. It's so unusual. The kid who snuck into revival tents to hear the music, and the kid who's going to the library to read about yoga and then contorting himself and developing his own practice of energy. That's unusual.
Yeah, also, by the time I was, I think, 19 or 20, I was trying breath work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and this is late 60s.
Right.
Learning, that was part of the Hatha yoga, and learning about that. And as I kept developing those awarenesses, I became more aware of everything around me and all the things that we don't necessarily see, but are there.
Amazing. Yeah. What did you do for work?
Well, I went to school for 2 art degrees.
Mm-hmm.
And I got a job coming out of university working for Sherwin Williams as a color specialist. And they said, hey, we're starting a new plant. It's going to be a pilot plant in Pontiac, Illinois, on the prairies. And we'd like you to go there as part of the team to help develop a new product. This is 1971, that we're going to call color concentrates for plastics. And at that time, the only way you could color plastic was to mix it in large drums with powder, and it got everywhere. And this was an idea to put the color actually in concentrated form into the pellets that then would get blended and mixed with the plastic. And so I absolutely fell in love with plastic.
Mm-hmm.
So,
oh, well, I get it. I'm an acrylic painter. And as people say plastic, I go, I love my acrylic colors, you
yes,
know?
Yes, yes, yeah. I remember painting with acrylics, you know, in school. I mm-hmm. loved it.
And it just keeps getting better because the quality of the paints and the colors are just so
I bet
dynamic
it's so
now.
Mm-hmm. So different now. Wow.
Yeah. Thanks to people like you.
Well, I from there, I eventually got an offer to help start a company in Central Illinois doing injection molding. So myself and a partner, and we were funded by another group, so because we were young guys, we didn't have any money. But we started an injection molding company, and it became successful. Eventually, I got into the larger corporate world of plastics and worked for a company out of Cincinnati, Ohio. Then I worked for a company out of Toronto, and that was more of a worldwide company that really gave me a lot more experience and broadened my horizons. That company eventually moved me out here to the Pacific Northwest to open the office for them and develop that area of expertise. So that's how I got to the Pacific Northwest.
Oh, my goodness. And did you land on Vashon, or did you take a step first and then jump over to Vashon?
Well, my wife, Nancy, is from Tacoma. I mean, she was born on Oahu. Her dad was in the Navy, so they traveled around. But they settled in Tacoma. And the first time I came out here, I was stunned. I could not believe something as incredible as the Pacific Northwest existed. And so when I got the opportunity to move out here, I said yes. And so Nancy and I moved, and we looked around Gig Harbor, over north of Seattle and stuff like that. And it just didn't really resonate. But when we got to Vashon, it resonated. And within about 5 hours of being on the island, we decided on the property and the builder and the house.
Oh my goodness, you move fast. You move fast.
Well, it took them a year to build the house.
Right.
And then we didn't want to move until our son graduated from high school. And so we waited another year while the contractor lived in the house as part of the deal.
Oh, interesting. So when you landed on Vashon, was there the kind of thriving music community that there is today?
Not as prevalent as it is today, but within the first week, I met a gentleman named Bob Woodman, who many people that have been on the island a long time know and remember and love. And Bob invited me the night that I met him to come over to his garage, and they were going to be playing music. And so I brought my banjo and went over there, and eventually I became a very close friend of Bob's and played music with him and Peter Larson and Marsha Morris and several others. And, you know, really learned and started doing my music more, our country music.
Mm-hmm.
Eventually, I asked Bob, I said, could I learn how to play guitar? He said, here, take this guitar. He gave me a really beautiful old Yamaha, and he taught me 3 chords.
Sweet. And did you have to buy a bottle of wine?
No, I didn't. And so I learned those three chords, and I came back, and Bob and Peter helped me learn more, and eventually I just started working on it myself. I still wasn't writing my own music, even though I kept hearing things. And so it was about, about 2020, roughly in that area. Yeah, it was about 2020, I started writing my own music. So 24 years ago.
Mm, wow. And were you working still, or you had?
Yes, yeah. I was still working. By that time, I had left the company from Toronto, and I got lured away by this other company that wanted me to help them develop a new product. And I helped them. It was myself and two other guys, and we developed the synthetic wine cork.
Wow.
Yeah, and we made it so it could function. And that's a whole other story and podcast in itself.
Yeah, I bet it is. I bet it is. But I love this story that, you know, you're supporting yourself with your expertise in plastics, and at the same time you're learning to play guitar, and that music that's always been with you is starting to get get written down. Mm-hmm. Recorded yet? Or
not recorded yet. I did my first recording in, I'm going to say about 2008. Mm-hmm. With Jeff Woolen of Raven Cries Recording Studio, which is a wonderful studio here on the island. Quite a story there also. But after things kind of fell apart with the synthetic wine cork, I started a business with a business partner of providing plastic equipment and technology throughout the Western United States, Western Canada, Northern Mexico. And that company became, and still is, extremely successful and is the largest of its kind in those areas. And it's carrying on. My business partner, I retired when I turned 70, and the business bought me out and is continuing to be very successful.
You look so young. How old are you now?
I'm 77.
Oh, wow. It shows you the power of music to keep you going strong.
And the power of good living and a healthy attitude, too.
Yeah, yeah. Well, this is good because on the creative path, you know, there are many ways to travel, but sometimes the question of how do I make a living is a big one. So you kind of had that one handled.
Yeah.
You had a living, so the music could be for you.
Right. Right. And that's mostly my focus, or rather a greater part of my time now, is the focus on music and continuing to learn and develop the music. I mean, my music's not about making it big. It's more about making it real and true to the mission of providing uplifting, positive music that is enjoyable to listen to, and for people to feel the concepts or the messages within the music.
I see. So you've got this whole New Thought metaphysical background, and sometimes that can be a little airy for people, but you bring it down, you bring it into people's hearts because you sing it. You bring it into the music so that they can go away with lyrics and humming tunes in their head that actually bring this to life.
Yes. Yeah. I've learned a lot. One of the challenges that most musicians have is how to get their music out to where people can listen to it and people that will resonate with that music.
Yeah.
And not everybody resonates with the music I write or one of my friends writes or performs or anything like that. And that's okay.
How do you get it out?
Well, that's an interesting question. I've learned an enormous amount. I've spent more hours than I can imagine on learning about marketing the music and creating the right things that are not in people's faces. And that's really important to me.
What does that mean, in people's faces?
In other words, I don't want to be the person that every time you open your email or get a text, there's somebody asking you to, hey, listen to my music, listen to my music, do this, do that, buy this, et cetera. I don't want that. It's not me. I learned how to use a CRM, computer resource management system. And that system has an ad attached to it. And what I did was I used the song Oceans of Energy from a concert that I did with my good friend Stephen Klein at the VCA. Mm-hmm. And I used that particular song. And in that ad, I say, if you enjoy this type of music, perhaps you would enjoy more of it, listening to it, learning more, having opportunities for more engagement. If you like that, click on this link. And when they click on that link, they get an opportunity to join my computer resource management system.
Through a website or just a link?
I would call it a link, because the link opens up another link that lets them listen to, I think, my song Dream Flyers. Mm-hmm. And then it says, if you like that, click here. And they do. Eventually, they have an opportunity to give me their email address and their phone number. And currently, I'm close to almost 1,000 people.
Sweet. So they really get to taste your music.
Yeah.
And you're not just throwing it. It's like, if you like this bite, take another. You like this bite, and then come on over.
Exactly.
And you told me on the way in that you have fans, even though that word is a little awkward for you, the fans as far away as, was it Australia or New Zealand?
I'm humbled by the amount of people in Australia and New Zealand that like my music. Also, surprisingly, Brazil, Portugal, Italy, Spain, Germany, the Netherlands.
Fantastic.
Ireland. I'm still puzzled by that. Ireland, who the country has fabulous music, but yet they seem to like mine.
How do they run into your music?
It's all online. The ad is through Facebook.
Okay.
So, and that goes out to people, you know. And then they have an opportunity. They see an ad, just like you see.
Right.
You'll see things on Facebook, and you can click on it or not.
So tell me, do they buy your music then, or do you refer them over to Apple Music or another source?
Well, that's an interesting that one, they have an opportunity within the what I call the platform that brings them further in.
Right.
They have an opportunity to buy a small package of things like my Humankind Be Both refrigerator magnet, decals, bookmarks,
merch,
that kind of stuff. You know, it's $4.
Yeah.
And that includes shipping. And people buy that.
Oh my gosh. Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think I mentioned I just shipped one to a guy in New Zealand.
That's amazing.
And then further on, then they get an opportunity to go to, and they get a link to something called cosmicfolkstore.net. Mm. And that has a specific type of merch. It has hats, T-shirts, long-sleeve shirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, things like that. And it all says, Humankind Be Both.
Ah. Oh.
So, and I call it my Humankind Be Both store.
Wow. So you're actually offering a really uplifting message as well as the merchandise you got.
Yes. And everyone in all of those messages, everyone gets an opportunity. They see that all of this, the proceeds from that go to help support the foundation that my wife and I started when I retired, called the Onward and Upward Foundation. And the Onward and Upward Foundation helps people who are out there doing good for others with nobody supporting them. And here on the island, we have support for the food bank, for the Interfaith Council on Homelessness, for Journeymen. Those just an example of the ones we do here on the island.
Oh, that is so great. I have to say, I just spent time in the studio recording for Give Big.
Oh, you know, yeah.
And the people are doing such great work on this island. Mm-hmm. And there are so many good, I mean, you've just shared some of the great ones, but they're doing such great work, mm-hmm. and they need our support. So how fabulous that yes. you can do that.
Yes. I feel like, you know, it's not that I need to earn an income off the music. It's more that I feel it important that positive message music
right.
get out there. People enjoy listening to.
Of course.
And without being preachy. That's the other thing, too. I really don't want to be
no,
preachy.
No, that's when I first listened to your music, I thought, well, where's the preaching? Because you could just almost feel a type of music that lent itself to preaching. But I would call it more opening. You know, you're inviting people to open to something rather than telling them what to do.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Well, I feel that we all have a gift of creativity.
Me too.
And that when we open ourselves up to it, it allows us to approach that gift almost on a sacred, what I call a sacred level of creativity. Mm-hmm. And I think, too, when we focus on whatever it is we do, with what I call the power of now, which is a great book, by the way,
by Eckhart Tolle. Yeah.
In fact, there's a song of mine called Now that I communicated with Eckhart, and I said, look, I don't want to tread on you here. I sent him the song and the lyrics before I ever published it, and I said, I just want your permission to use this because it uses some of the ideas he has in his book. Not all of it, because a lot of it's mine, but that particular song is all about now.
Oh, how fun.
And he communicated back, and he said, oh, absolutely, yes. Love the song. Totally there.
Oh, I love that. I love that. So what's your measure of success? It's not getting, you know, you've had your career, you've done well, so it's not how many millions you make.
No.
What do you have an internal measure there?
Well, that's an I've never had that question. So that's a good question. It's not about. I mean, it's not about the money, even though the money would be great because then we could do more with the foundation, mm-hmm. which to me is giving back, and that's the important thing. I would think the level of success would be knowing that other people are getting good from the music,
mm-hmm.
and getting awarenesses from the music. Perhaps it would help, you know, my song, if there was one thing to do, if there was one thing to say, what would be the very best that could come out of you,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, you know, maybe that helps somebody think about that when they listen to it and going, hey, I could do this or I could do that, and become more aware. And I think that's part of what we are in terms of life.
Yeah. So it sounds like the measure is, you know, am I uplifting and inspiring, helping people to take that next step towards
yes.
their own opening or awakening, which is great. And it's not attached to a particular metric or how many, how much, and all those other things that tend to dominate our commercial culture.
I completely agree. And actually, I mentioned that I had Bruce Ferris in the recording studio yesterday, and we were recording.
And let's just say Bruce is a jazz artist, or how do you describe him?
Well, Bruce is a multi-talented artist.
Okay,
yeah,
good.
He can
here on the island,
so
yeah.
much.
Uh-huh.
And for this particular song, I wanted bass. And Bruce has a very sensitive approach to songs. He gets the song, and he understands it. And as this song is a new one, it's called Heart Shine. Bruce and the producer, Jeff, as we're working on this, they both said, this song is about reverence.
Oh, love it.
And they approach it that way too. And Chris O'Brien did a fabulous job on the piano on it. So I'm grateful.
Great.
I'm looking forward to publishing that one. That'll be a good one.
Well, you said you would share a little bit of music. We're constrained because we have to not use music that you're going to be. You can go to Apple Music and hear some of this wonderful music. But today we have music that you're not going to hear on Apple Music, especially for folks here on Voice of Vashon. So
Yeah, you know what? I thought I would do a very Vashon song.
Oh, great. Lovely.
It's about Monument Road.
Ah, my turf.
Yeah.
Kind of. I go back and forth on Monument to come into town sometimes.
Okay. Well, this one, let's see here. I've got a pick here somewhere. I wrote this one with my good friend Mark Graham. And Mark keeps saying, no, it's your song, you just take it. But he and I did it together.
It's nice to acknowledge people, yeah.
But I was thinking about, he was on the way over to the house, and he came down Monument Road, and he saw the white crosses there. And we started talking about that. And I said, you know, every community all across this land has white crosses. And so we took that theme and wrote this song called Monument Road. Monument Road runs down 37 Ford and it runs so fast. Get up to 50, I'm free at last. Flying past the field where plows turn up Indian bone. Doing 50 and you never know it, cause the concrete's smooth as glass. I'm gonna scratch a little gravel when I turn by the Pioneer Stone. Monument Road runs down just about a mile from town. There's a right-hand curve and the sign said you better go slow. Take it just a mile too fast, buddy, it could be your last. There's a new white cross at the end of Monument Road. '57 Chevy, it runs so fast. Pedal to the metal, I'm free at last. Gotta put her on blocks, but I got another tank to burn. A couple years in the army ain't gonna break my stride. No one's ever done 90 past that old wreck Ford at the turn. Monument Road runs down just about a mile from town. Driving too fast is part of a young man's code. But it takes more than nerve if you're gonna make that curve. And pass that little white cross on Monument Road. '67 Vet, it runs so fast, you can't believe the wind in your head. Throw my bag on the floor, turn a key, and put it in gear. Thought things would be different by the time I turned 21. Those dreams grow small as I leave them in my rearview mirror. Monument Road runs down, and it takes you out of town. There's a right-hand turn and they say you better take it real slow. When I make that turn, it will be the last. I'll pass those little white crosses on Monument Road. Gonna take the turn so fast that it will be the last. I'll pass those little white crosses on Monument Road. Monument Road runs down.
How fun. Thank you so much for bringing that. And because I do travel Monument Road, it's one of the really loveliest roads on Vashon. You know, I'm going to think of your song. But I'm not going to drive fast.
You don't want to watch that curve. Well, the thing is that all of us are aware of the tragedies of people driving too fast, mm-hmm. and particularly the young people. Mm-hmm. And I was guilty of that too. Fortunately, I never had an accident and, knock on plastic.
Yeah. But those little crosses, and we do see them from time to time, they really stab at your heart.
They do.
Those lives don't come back.
Yeah. And now that is that particular type of song I would call more the folk side of my songs.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
As opposed to the cosmic side
okay,
of my songs.
Okay, good, good, good. Well, we'll give you an opportunity to do one cosmic song, but let me ask you on the folk side, because a lot of folk songs, you know, they reach us where we have our pain, mm-hmm. you know? And so has there been anything about the music business that has been challenging for you?
Time.
How's that?
It takes up an enormous amount of your time. And the, you know, there's different ways to go about the music business. One is you got to get out there and get in front of the fans and play and play and play and perform and perform and perform. That means you can be on the road and you have to dedicate your life to doing that. I have a good friend, Eli Lev, who's a wonderful musician, and he just finished last winter. He did a tour around the United States, booked virtually every night.
Wow!
And up into Canada, and then he just completed a tour around Western Europe, and now he's touring Southeast United States. And working his way back up to his home in the Northeast.
I hope he loves it.
Well, he does. He is a wonderful, positive soul. Mm-hmm. And he does a great job. He writes wonderful music. And that's one way to go about it. But the other way is everybody in the music business that's writing songs, mm-hmm. they all want to get discovered. Oh, I've got to make it big. I need a label. Labels don't really do what they used to do anymore.
Uh-huh.
And so it's more the independent artist that has to spend an enormous amount of time promoting themselves.
And money.
And money. It takes a lot of money and a budget. And you have to figure that budget out. And I have a spreadsheet that I put together that basically allocates money to each song. And so I determine how much I'm going to spend on recording, how much I'm going to spend on marketing. And then I can watch that and see, okay, this makes sense, this doesn't make sense. And figuring that out is a hard, hard thing for the independent musician nowadays.
Yeah, because you also have business chops, and that's not necessarily, if somebody's coming without that kind of background, understanding the numbers part of the game is it's so different. It's a different energy than
it
what
is.
It takes to create a song. But if you want to get the song out, it's tough because, you know, I know as an independent author, you kind of go, well, how much investment, when it's very difficult to ever really recoup all those expenses.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And if you're trying to make a living at it, oh, my gosh. You know.
Well, particularly nowadays where you can get music out to radio stations, but, you know, radio DJs get all kinds of requests daily, and people inundate them with their albums and their CDs and their music and stuff. So to get heard is very difficult. I know a man in Taxi, and Taxi is a vetting organization that vets for the music industry, but basically for sync placement, meaning commercials, movies, things like that. And he said, you know, I get a box full of CDs every week of albums, you know, or I get hundreds of stream links. And he said, essentially, you've got 10 to 20 seconds before I could move on.
Wow.
Yeah, because it's too many.
It's too many. And even then, even getting to those 10 to 20 seconds probably is tough if you don't have a name or, you know, somebody recommending you in a certain way.
Yeah. And then, you know, you've got the contract side of things too. I had a song called Sing Me a Smile that I was contacted by a movie producer that wanted to use it in a new movie. And I was very excited, you know, because they were saying, hey, you can make, you know, you'll make thousands of dollars here. So that was exciting. So they sent me the contract. And I looked at the contract. And I said, well, this is ridiculous. So I have a friend here on the island who's a retired lawyer who was in the entertainment industry. And I had him look at it. He says, Chuck, don't sign this. It gave all the rights to the song away, including I could not perform it myself. And I'm going, so I contacted the guy back and I said, you know, I'll do this, but here's my requirements. And they said, no, either sign that contract or not. And I said, well, thanks for the offer. No, thanks.
Wow. Ah, oh, what a hard, yeah. They're not making it nice for independents.
There's a lot of pitfalls for the independents.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that you can't be successful. You can be successful.
Especially if you just find success on your own terms. You know, some will make it, but also if you have that inner litmus test, you know, that guide to what's really important to you.
Right. Right. And I've learned also in the streaming services, you know, Spotify is the bottom feeder of pain. You know, it's 0.00235 to 0.00275 cents per stream.
I think I told you I talked to Iris Dement last year, the singer who came to the Vashon Center for the Arts, and she said took over 1 million hits to pay for the recording of one of her songs. I mean, 1 million just to get to base camp, you know?
Yeah. Or there's also, frankly, Amazon Music, Apple Music, YouTube Music, they pay reasonably well.
Oh, interesting to know.
They're much better. And so I'm starting to promote more through Apple Music.
Good
than,
to know.
Than the others.
The Spotify and all, yeah.
And Spotify also is kind of brutal in that I have a song called Bird of Faith, which I'm really pleased with. And I put it out, put it out in February, okay? And this is May. So last month, I got a notification from my distributor that Spotify says that your song, Bird of Faith, has been used, has been promoted by AI. And I'm going, I didn't do that. But then Spotify charged my distributor $10 and took it off their list.
Oh, my goodness.
So then my distributor said, well, we can't have that. So we took it off also. And if you continue this, we're going to take all your songs off and discontinue.
Oh, that's horrible. Because they thought that AI had generated the song?
And I didn't.
Of course not.
I did promote it through a curator who I checked with and talked with. And they went back and looked. And they said, we can see, it wasn't us, we can see where somebody on this date, you suddenly got all this spike, you know, and there were close to 18,000 streams in that 3-month period that it was on, but at the very end, that where that spike was, it was huge, and somebody has taken your song and done it on an AI promotion, and I'm the one that suffers for it.
Oh, that's
and actually, my fans suffer for it too, because I had a lot of people that like that song.
Wow, boy, that's a whole world. I won't try and go there because it would take a lot to understand it. But oh my God, the new world. Do you happen to have any of your anything from your cosmic folk side that you can play?
Sure.
We have probably time for one more song, and I would love to hear it.
All right. Well, this one's fairly new. In fact. I just changed the key on it this morning.
Oh, yeah, okay, you're hearing it first. Great, thank you.
A dream brushed past like a stranger in a crowd. A moment passed by, there wasn't any doubt.
If you had any wish that you wanted to, would you go right back and make that dream come true? Second sight, it seems so right, like a magic in a starry night. Submerge yourself in the magic waters of dreams. Let them flow over you like a rushing mountain stream. There are dreams so real you wonder what you see. With thoughts so thick you must brush them away to breathe. Second sight, it seems so right, like the magic in a starry night. Like a shaft of light shining in a moonlit sky, dreams take flight and keep your thoughts so high. There's a quiet place in the power of your mind. In stillness, the spirit is a place where you can find. Second sight, it seems so right, like the magic in a starry night. Trust yourself, listen to your dream. Shadows of doubt are gone when you see. The dream's light that makes them all come true. Find that dream that already lives in you. Second sight, it feels so right, like the magic in a starry night. Second sight, it seems so right, like the magic in a starry
night. Thank you so much. What a treat to be able to hear some new and live music. And if people want to find out more about you, I know they can go to Apple Music and check out Chuck, R-O-E-H-M, Chuck mm-hmm. Rehm.
Yeah.
Or they can, is it, your website is CosmicFolk.net or?
CosmicFolk.net.
.net.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's the website. And of course, Chuck Rehm at any of the music streaming sites. Like
yes.
You said, it's R-O-E-H-M.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, we'll include that in the show notes for Embracing the Muse on Voice of Vashon. But for right now, thank you so much. It's been a total treat for me to be able to not only hear more of your story, but hear your music.
Well, thank you, Sally. I appreciate it greatly.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon. and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.